Listening to CJSF 90.1 FM in Burnaby, British Columbia, broadcasting from the unceded territories of the Coast Salish peoples. Find us online at cjsf.ca, on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and SoundCloud.
New Dimensions is brought to you by Friends of New Dimensions membership support and by Larson Publications, publisher of the book An Open Life, Joseph Campbell in conversation with Michael Toms. New Dimensions and our quarter-hour New Dimensions Cafe programs are now available worldwide as podcasts. You can find them at the iTunes Store and on many podcast sites and mobile apps. You can also find our podcasts and much more on our website, newdimensions.org. It is only through a change in human consciousness that the world will be transformed. The personal and the planetary are connected. As we expand our awareness of mind, body, psyche, and spirit, and bring that awareness actively into the world, so also will the world be changed. This is our quest as we explore new dimensions.
Our guest today, Dr. William Keeping, states that we are witnessing a revolution of consciousness, the birth of a vast, unified worldview that unites and cross-fertilizes East and West, modern and indigenous, human and non-human, contemporary and ancient, leading us toward a deep collective realization of a seamless oneness of existence as revealed in a universal path of divine love. Is there a universal path of love that holds true in all religions? Where do religions intersect at the deepest level, and what is that deep level of spiritual wisdom? How do we find and embrace the transformative path of divine love? And what does science have to say about consciousness? Today, we'll be exploring these questions and more with our guest, Dr. William Keeping. William Keeping is a mathematical physicist, environmental scientist, and has been a practitioner on the contemplative path of divine love for over 35 years. He co-founded the Satyana Institute, as well as the Gender Equity and Reconciliation International Project, with his wife, Reverend Cynthia Bricks. The Satyana Institute is a nonprofit service and training organization based near Seattle, Washington. Together with his wife, Reverend Bricks, he conducts trainings, retreats, and workshops nationally and internationally, encouraging individuals, communities, and organizations to combine their inner work of the heart with outer service in the world. He's a co-author with his wife, Reverend Cynthia Bricks, of Divine Duality, Women Healing Women, and is the author of Belonging to God, Spirituality, Science, and a Universal Path of Divine Love. Join us for the next hour as we explore the mysticism and science of a universal path of divine love with our guest, Dr. William Keeping. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. I'll be your host. Welcome to New Dimensions. Will, welcome.
Thank you, Justine. It's a joy to be back on this program.
It's such a joy to have you. Do you mind if I call you Will?
Not at all.
Oh, great, great. I would like to begin a bit with your story. I think it's such a wonderful little vignette about how you first got on to the contemplative path from being a hardcore scientist. So can you describe turning in your dissertation?
Oh, yes. Well, it's my spiritual training began the instant that my secular training ended. I had finished my dissertation and all of the defense, and I was literally filing the dissertation with the secretary of the department. And I was very excited because, 25 years of schooling, and I finally receiving this highest degree. And the secretary went away to file the dissertation. And on his desk was this book by Krishnamurti, who I'd never heard of. But I picked up the book and I thought, oh, this will be fun to kind of, you know, to make fun of spirituality, because I thought, you know, I had a dim view of those things because, you know, atheism comes with the package in Orthodox scientific training. And so I picked this book up and I started reading and I was just blown away by what I read. And then I opened to another section and I just, it spoke to me at a level that I had no idea, you know, what this was about, but I could feel this draw and this inspiration. And then, of course, I put the book quickly down on the guy's desk so, you know, when he came back, he wouldn't see that, think I'm rummaging through his things. And he came back and congratulated me, Dr. Keepin. And so I was just this brand new PhD. And I got on my bicycle and I rode to the bookstore and I bought that book and I stayed up until 3 a.m. just devouring it. And that really was the beginning of kind of my training in spiritual practice.
That is so interesting because I remember, and we've had the privilege of sitting down with both Krishnamurti and then also with the physicist David Bohm, who worked yes. with Einstein. And it was very interesting. You picked up that book because there are many, and I think people can find it online somewhere, there are many videos of very deep conversations that David Bohm had with Krishnamurti. So here is the scientist coming together with the philosopher, so to speak. And so that, I just think of the synchronicity of that.
The synchronicity is astounding, actually, because at that time, I had not heard of David Bohm or Krishnamurti, even though those dialogues had gone on, and they went on for 20-some years. And actually, David Bohm, I had the privilege also of spending some days with him some years later and was able to share with him some of my deep musings that actually are some of the formative ideas that were developed in this book, Belonging to God. And so I was very inspired to meet David Bohm and deeply inspired by their later dialogues when I learned about it. But at that moment, I did not know about this at all. So you're right, it's very striking. And Bohm actually, he to me was a true scientist because he carried his quest for truth beyond the laboratory, even though he did that impeccably. And as you said, was a colleague of Einstein's. He also carried his quest to some of the great spiritual sages on the planet and really wanted to understand what is the nature of reality that is consistent with the broadest set of human data, not just scientific data, but mystical data and even artistic data. So I was very inspired by the depth and breadth of his inquiry into the nature of reality.
This led you to kind of the same quest, so to speak, as David had of questioning, okay, what is the nature of reality? And I know in this book and in your studies, your contemplative studies, you have also done a lot of work in the world on peace and reconciliation. I mean, that's been a very important part of your work in the world.
Yes.
And so when you take some of the major wars and disagreements we have are between religions, are done in the name of religions. So what can you say about what you have found in your study of some of the major religions, where they might come together and where they might fall apart?
Well, as you correctly said, there's much conflict that is constellated around the different religions. And there's a focus on the different theologies, the contradictions across the theological and systems of prayer and practice. But actually, what I have found, as have others before me, that the commonalities across the religions are far more profound and rich than are the differences. And so the commonalities really point to a universal path of the heart, a universal path of love, and this whole inspiration of the human, the highest purpose for being human, which is to enter that transformative journey of consciousness that leads us to what is called union with God in the theistic traditions, or realization, enlightenment in the non-theistic traditions. But it's that transformative journey of the depths of one's being that is really shared in common across the religions. And the stages of that journey are very similar. The processes of purification, of illumination, of coming into a greater degree of humility, of facing one's own darkness, and then having those things transmuted and replaced by a light that comes from another plane of existence that begins to illuminate the being. All of these things are inherent in the spiritual journey. That journey is the whole point of religions in the first place.
I'm thinking of the analogy that you have of the forest and the trees, and there are all these different trees. And can you describe that analogy?
Yes, that the religions can be kind of similar, likened to the trees in a forest. And they're all different kinds of trees. Some are tall and thin. Others are round and short. Some have leaves. Some have needles. But they all draw their life from the same hidden waters. They're all rooted in the same ground. They all draw from these hidden waters below the ground, and they all stretch up vertically to the one light of the sun above. So too with the religions. They have these different outer forms, but their inner essence is identical, and they all reach to the same supreme light and get their life from that light and those hidden waters.
And then rooted down into the hidden waters and the deep, the wisdom of them.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely.
If they're the same, I know that you go through different scriptural things. You actually, it's not just that you're saying this, but you've done a deep study of scriptures, of the Quran, of the Bible, and also the Hindu Bhagavad Gita. And so that's very profound that you will find these passages or writings from the mystics of any of these different traditions. So can you name a few of the scriptures that back you up on this?
Well, as you said, I have gone into those three scriptures in particular. I wanted to focus on the theistic traditions because there is, I think, a contemporary bias against the theistic traditions as being somehow a little less advanced or less evolved compared to the non-dual path of realization, the direct non-dual path. And so I wanted to kind of correct that bias because the theistic traditions are also ultimately non-dual. They lead to non-dual realization of the supreme reality, which is called God. But they start in a dualistic place with a place of experiencing oneself as a soul and then giving and entering into devotional practices in relation to a supreme being, which is called God in the theistic traditions. But ultimately, the nature of that God is realized as an unconditioned, uncompounded absolute that is essentially the same as the ultimate reality that's affirmed, for example, in Buddhism, or a Brahma Nirguna, the ultimate reality affirmed in Advaita Vedanta. So I think it's very important to recognize that the theistic traditions lead through the path of love to a non-dual realization of God. So that's one reason I focused on the theistic traditions. The other reason is that the theistic traditions really start with the power of devotion in the heart. And this is a profound power that can lead the human being all the way through to full realization of divinity and of what is called God. And that, too, sometimes has been given short shrift in our culture.
We'll go into more detail of that in just one moment. I want to remind our listeners that I'm here with Dr. William Keeping, and he's the author of Belonging to God, Spirituality, Science, and a Universal Path of Divine Love. And if you want to know more about his work, you can go to his website, thepathofdivinelove.org, or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions. Thank you. I'm here with Dr. William Keeping, and he's the author of Belonging to God, Spirituality, Science, and a Universal Path of Divine Love. So, Will, you were just talking about the two paths, so to speak, that will ultimately lead to the same thing. And one, in these times, a lot of people, spiritual seekers, are looking at non-dualism and that whole realm of what is called the direct path. And then it kind of poo-poos or looks down on those in the what is sometimes termed the bhakti path, or the path of love, the path of the heart, the path of devotion, because it seems as if it's dualistic. I'd love for you to say more about that.
Well, this is actually an age-old bias that goes all the way back to Shankara, or perhaps before. Shankara himself advocated the direct path of knowledge, and yet Shankara...
Wait, now tell us who he lived when...
And... Shankara lived in the 8th century, and he was the great Hindu mystic that basically traveled all across India and sort of reclaimed Hinduism, sort of revitalized Hinduism, and is credited with having established four different schools that led to the four Mahavakyas in the Upanishads that he emphasized. And so he's one of the great exponents of Hinduism, very profound. And he tended to advocate the non-dual path of Advaita Vedanta. But what's ironic is that in his own path, when he got stuck at a certain point and couldn't proceed further, he entered into an intensive period of devotion and wrote these incredible hymns to the goddess. And it was after that that he was then able to proceed further. So he himself went through this devotional, intensely devotional period in order to advance his path. And in those poems stand as really exquisite testimonies of the devotional path. Aurobindo also speaks about this, Sri Aurobindo, and he says
also
that,
an Indian.
Yeah, Aurobindo was a great 20th century Indian sage who died about 1951. And he really synthesized, in a certain sense, Western philosophy and Eastern mysticism in what he called his integral yoga. And Aurobindo also speaks about those on the path of knowledge sometimes look down upon those on the path of bhakti or devotion as a thing inferior, not suited for those who are ready for the heights of the truth. So there is sometimes this dismissal of the devotional path. And so part of what I wanted to do in this book was to really articulate how the path of devotion actually leads to the radical full realization of what could be called non-dual realization of God. And we see this across the traditions. In fact, it's proclaimed in the scriptures. For example, in the Christian scripture, Jesus says, you know, I and the Father are one. He repeatedly affirms his oneness with God. We see the same thing in the Upanishads, you know, Aham Brahmasmi, I am Brahman. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna promises radical union with his very being. He says to Arjuna, Arjuna is basically the human disciple. Krishna is God incarnated. And basically Krishna says, you will enter into my being and you will know me and you will come to me. And he promises this union with the absolute being, the divine being. And we see this across the traditions.
So what about in Islam?
In Islam, it's a slightly different because they don't talk about union with God, because that would be essentially God is always incommensurate with all of manifest reality. But they talk about nearness to God. And this nearness to God gets infinitesimally close. So that one can become increasingly near to God, increasingly near to God, so near that in a sense the distinction dissolves. But they always theologically maintain the distinction. But what I find, and there's actually some tension between some of the greatest mystics like Ibn Arabi and Rumi and others, and some of the orthodoxy of Islam, which is always very determined to maintain that distinction. But what I find particularly compelling is the phenomenology, the actual Sufi and Islamic mystics, For example, there's a hadith that says, "My servant never ceases to draw nigh unto me with acts of devotion. And when I love him," this is Allah speaking, this is the voice of God, "when I love him, I become the eyes by which he sees, the mouth by which he speaks, the feet by which he walks." So this is the process of divinization, where the divine being itself takes up residence in the human devotee. And we find almost the exact same statement, for example, from Teresa of Avila, who says, "Christ has no body now but yours, no feet but yours, no mouth but yours." And from St. Paul, who says, "I live, yet not I, but Christ liveth in me." So basically, the process is the same. In Hinduism, it could be, "I live, yet not I, but Krishna liveth in me." In Buddhism, "I live, yet not I, but Buddha liveth in me." And in Islam, "I live, yet not I, but Allah liveth in me." That transformative process, is what I'm saying, is the same across the traditions.
You just mentioned that that was a verse from the Hadith. And if you can explain or say exactly what the Hadith is in Islam.
Yeah, there's two sources, canonical sources in Islam. One is, of course, the Quran itself, which is a foundational source. And the other one is what are called the sayings of the Prophet. And they are called the Hadith, or Ahadith is the plural. Yes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So that's helpful for people who are not as familiar.
Yes.
So going back to the idea of the path of knowledge or non-dualism, I'm thinking that's so appealing to Westerners who live in their heads, and the path of knowledge, it seems very seductive. But it's a difficult path. I mean, that direct path is fraught with some dangers, and people might get confused fall off of the path easily because they just get discouraged.
Well, it is said to be a more difficult path, and a number of commentators, Ramakrishna, for example, the great Indian sage of the 19th century, said that, you know, the path is more difficult than the path of love. Krishnaprem, one of the great 20th century mystics of India, also speaks about how the direct path of knowledge is more difficult for most people. The path of love enables every experience of life to be used as a stepping stone to come into that communion with God. And the entire manifest world is seen as the body of God, and one's relating to it, then every action becomes a practice of devotion. So I don't mean to denigrate the path of knowledge. It's a very profound path.
Yes.
I'm simply saying that the path of love is also a very profound path and leads to the same place. Meister Eckhart says it very beautifully when he says, "This I and that God become one is and act in the world as this isness." So what happens in that path is that the I and God both are dissolved into this one being, which is the dynamic isness of divine consciousness, and one becomes that. That is a non-dual realization of God, which happens through the path of devotion.
Well, in my experience, it's something that we all can tap into so easily because we've all felt in some moment in our lives a feeling in our heart of oneness with and love for someone or something, or even our dogs or our cats. I mean, that may seem mundane, but we know that feeling, and it seems to me it's a direct path to go right to that feeling and know that somehow that is the God within. Where am I with that?
With that, here's what I would say to that. You're right on the track here, because there's a beautiful saying from Rumi where he says, "Thought gives off smoke to prove the existence of fire. The mystic sits within the burning." There is a fire in the heart that fire of love that we all feel when we feel that inspiration of love. We feel it very strongly when we fall in love. But if we open ourselves, we feel it every time we walk outside and we see a leaf on a tree. We see the beautiful colors. We see a child playing. We see that beautiful, heart-melting look in the eyes of a puppy. There's a power there. That's the power of love. That power has the power to take us right through our ego in our deepest identification and become one with the Supreme Being. And the reason is that the inmost source of that love is none other than the transcendent essence of God that dwells in the heart. The two are one. And this is the consistent teaching across all the religions, the oneness with that essence. And I would affirm also that that inmost essence of the theistic traditions, which we call the very heart of God, is none other than the supreme reality affirmed by Buddhism. And this is actually part of the thesis, for example, of a beautiful book called Common Ground Between Islam and Buddhism, written by a scholar named Reza Shah Kazemi. And he makes that same statement that what the Buddhists affirm as ultimate reality is none other than what monotheists call the very essence of God.
So are you saying, like in Buddhism, if you're working with a teacher, a Rinpoche, a Lama, and they talk about devotion, it's sometimes interpreted as devotion to that person, that individual, but what they're really talking about is a more universal devotion.
I think so. For example, Urgyen Rinpoche, who's one of the great Dzogchen masters, the father of Sokni Rinpoche and Mingyur Rinpoche, who are very popular teachers today. And Urgyen Rinpoche, in his book Rainbow Painting, speaks of how devotion is absolutely essential on the path. And he actually says, this is Buddhist now, this is straight Dzogchen. And he says, people come to me and they say, I've been practicing meditation for years, but I don't seem to get anywhere. And Urgyen Rinpoche says, that's because they're using the wrong method and that devotion is absolutely essential. So in Buddhism, you have devotion to the truth or devotion to enlightenment. In the theistic paths, you have devotion to the supreme reality that we call God. But the fuel for the path in either case is this strong fire in the heart that propels you, you know, into that higher states of consciousness and gives you the power and the courage to face whatever obstacles come along the way, including your own shadow side and your own darkness, all of which has to be transmuted. So the process is the same.
I'm here with Dr. William Keeping, and he is the author of Belonging to God, Spirituality, Science, and a Universal Path of Divine Love. And his website is thepathofdivinelove.org, O-R-G, thepathofdivinelove.org. Or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions.
New Dimensions is brought to you by Friends of New Dimensions membership support and by Larson Publications, publisher of the book An Open Life, Joseph Campbell in Conversation with Michael Toms. New Dimensions and our quarter-hour New Dimensions Cafe programs are now available worldwide as podcasts. You can find them at the iTunes Store and on many podcast sites and mobile apps. You can also find our podcasts and much more on our website, New Dimensions.